Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. June 5, 2020. Medium published my new article, The Fight for Inclusion in the Midst of COVID-19. Anger is not the only thing passing along the chain of transmission among people in America during the nationwide protests over the killing of George Floyd. New coronavirus outbreaks due to crowding in the massive demonstrations seem imminent, warn health experts. The most basic human instinct, the sense of preservation to avoid further contagion, has been overshadowed by the fury of the multitude of protesters rallying to demand justice. If only such an intense inner drive would transform into an engine of love that would cover the entire nation through the realization that America's strength lies in its diversity. America's healing depends on the efforts made to attain unity and mutual guarantee. Every person should be a guarantor for his neighbor's integrity and prosperity. As recent reports indicate, Mr. Floyd himself tested positive for coronavirus antibodies from a previous infection. Even though it may never be known whether this played a role in his death at the hands of the police, his case is symbolic of the two main struggles afflicting today's America: racial tensions that have unleashed incendiary social unrest and whose end is still unclear, and a deadly pandemic that has already claimed more than 100,000 lives. A vaccine for the COVID-19 virus may be available in the near future, but what about a vaccine to heal the breakage within the American society? Even if the massive protests stop raging across the U.S., the calm will only be temporary, as we have witnessed in previous movements throughout history. Therefore, we must identify the solution at a deeper level, at its root cause. The root of the problem is found in human nature: the desire to squelch diversity instead of embracing it. To be one as a society is not synonymous with all members being identical. The whole is composed of the inclusion of different shapes, colors, and forms that complement one another to create a sparkling singularity. Such a state of wholeness can only be reached through love. In order to attain love, the entire society must engage in the revolutionary transformation where our differences are cultivated and embraced above the natural inclination for divisive competition and destructive envy. Divergences, contradictions, and variations should be the bricks used to build bridges of effective connections based on trust, respect, and mutual support. The roof that protects all the differences can only be love, never pride, arrogance, or violence. As it is written by our sages, love covers all crimes. We need to love each other beyond the physical body and skin, to love and connect to the heart of the person. Then we will see that we are all parts of one system, the system of nature. It is not by chance that we have been created with different attributes and characteristics. Just like everything in nature, nothing occurs randomly. Every action and element of creation has a purpose, including the existence of opposites. The contrasts exist so we can exert our free will and make conscious efforts toward connection. Only when people resist separation, can a nation become a healthy one. Therefore, America's healing depends on the efforts made to attain unity and mutual guarantee. Every person should be a guarantor for his neighbor's integrity and prosperity. This is how all societies will eliminate all social illnesses. What else does the virus want to tell us? Question: A pandemic helps us feel that we are all interconnected. For the first time in human history, we find ourselves in the same state, as if glued to our homes. No one is going anywhere, everyone is in a stupor. But at the same time, we continue to act as before, selfishly, each for their own interest. We blame each other, we pull toward our own benefit. The Americans printed $4 trillion only for themselves, they are not sharing it with anyone else. India is fenced off from China, as is Hungary from the European Union. They all run like mice into their holes. How much more does it take to show the world the inefficiency of egoistic decisions so that we find some other way, so that a radical turning point finally occurs? Where is this point? Are we getting close? How much do we have to suffer until we find the right path? Answer: the problem is that we do not want to acknowledge our dependence on each other. Therefore, each one comes out of these problems individually and does not care what happens to others. Moreover, one measures his well-being in comparison to others, so, the worse it is for others, the better it is for him. Thus, the problems are solved very simply, each for himself and in no way together. This is in contradiction to the coronavirus because the virus itself is global and it affects us globally. It brings us to a certain general equation because it stems from nature. And all of nature is absolutely global. It follows that if we continue to behave as we do now, nothing good will come out from the virus. We will not be able to overcome it because it is on a level above us. It acts globally, on the whole of humanity, we cannot neutralize it alone. This is a completely different level of influence, its influence on us and our influence on it. Therefore, we will have to fight it differently, fight ourselves, our egoism, and only to the extent that we are ready to unite can we have an effect on the virus. The virus hits on the lack of proper connection between us. We still do not understand this, but in the future, we must realize that it does not strike at each one of us, or at nations, or at any groups of people, but at the fact that we are not connected. This is completely new for us, and therefore, it is difficult for us to work with it. The coronavirus is designed to force us to come together so that we begin to treat everyone as one, one whole humanity. And therefore, the virus itself does not pose a threat to humanity, just like anything else that happens in the world. We simply do not understand where nature is leading us, but in its language, with its actions, it forces us to interact correctly with each other. Presently, the virus forces us to separate, to move away from each other, but this is on the physical level. However, if we begin to get closer to each other internally, in mutual support and guarantee, a feeling that we are one single humanity, then we would feel how we can overcome all the negative effects that arise in us from this virus. They arise not because the virus is spreading further out, but because it acts on us as on a single entity and we are divided into separate parts and individual personalities. From CAB TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, April 19, 2020. Shavuot, the holiday of unity. The holiday of Shavuot comes on the 50th day after Passover. For 49 days we perform the Omer count, which is like counting tired bundles, because the main work of man is to bind himself with the Creator. If we bind all of us together with our desires and intentions, we create one common vessel, we create a place for the revelation of the Creator's light. There are seven sefirot in the soul, seven qualities that are developing in the head of the spiritual part, Suf, Rosh, Chesed, Gvura, Tiferet, Netzach, Hod, Yesod, and Malkhut. In each Sefirah, there are another seven Sefirot, that is, 7 by 7 equals 49, and combining all together, we get 50. Therefore, on the 50th day after exiting Egypt, from the moment we began to correct our spiritual vessel, the connection between us, we come to this special day when the connection between everybody emerges. This day is called the holiday of Shavuot. In Egypt, we were still under the control of the desire to receive and could not connect with each other. Pharaoh kept us in slavery and did not allow us to connect with each other. When we escape from the slavery of Pharaoh, we can begin to connect, and that is why we run away from him. After all, it was very good in Egypt in the corporeal sense. It was bad only in the spiritual sense because of the inability to connect. Those who wanted to connect, considered it a spiritual gain and were not afraid to sacrifice material things for this purpose, they came out of Egypt. After that, when we start to connect with each other, we come to the state of Omer, a bundle. So, we join part by part, counting these bundles until we reach the last, 49th day in the Omer count when we are already able to receive from the Creator the light that will fill us. And for 49 days, we were receiving only the light of correction, so it was called the Omer. Each time, we found egoistic qualities between us that did not allow us to connect. But we tried to correct them and connect them, until on the 50th day, everything finally connected and we reached the common quality of mutual bestowal between us and from us to the Creator. Now the Creator can also give us the light, and this is why it is called the Day of the Giving, the Torah. The symbols of this holiday are milk, the sign of bestowal, and a connected group bound together in one bundle, Omer, and in adhesion with the Creator. From the fourth part of the Daily Kabbalah lesson, May 28, 2020, Feast of Weeks. Why is lesson preparation needed? When a person comes to studying the wisdom of Kabbalah, he does not understand where he has come. He thinks that the main thing is knowledge and study. He is curious to know how many angels are in heaven, what their names are, what the upper world is, what our lives are, who controls us, and how we can control our own destiny. However, he does not have and cannot have the right attitude to spirituality. This is like a 3-year-old child who does not understand how the world is organized, how everything works, and what the true reasons is for everything that is happening. He lives by being close to the adults who arrange his world. And he perceives this world to the extent of his abilities. So also a person who comes to the wisdom of Kabbalah at first hopes to learn something interesting, to gain some kind of power. However, over time, he understands what faith above reason means, which allows him to see with his inner vision the real world, the world of truth. Then he begins to prepare himself for the transition from the perception of the world in corporeal sensory organs to perception in the vessels of bestowal in order to see the world as the Creator sees it. He wants to become like the Creator, to adhere to him, to be together with him, and to feel like he does. Therefore, he always checks himself regarding his attitude to the Creator. When he falls from this perception and begins to feel only this world, he returns to his demand to feel the Creator and all of reality as the Creator feels it, in the qualities of bestowal. In this way, he constantly moves from the qualities of reception to the qualities of bestowal, from the left line to the right one, and begins to climb the degrees of the spiritual ladder, as though with 2 legs. He does not try to hop from step to step on 1 leg because this is impossible. Rather, he first steps with his left leg, rising in the left line 1 degree higher, and then lifts his right leg there. And then again, the left line 1 degree higher and the right line that joins it. A person rises and each time changes his perception and measure of adhesion with the Creator. This is how his advancement takes place. Therefore, the preparation for the lesson is aimed at increasing our sensitivity. It depends on what part of the world a person is in and what time of day they come to class. For many, it is early morning. They wake up from sleep and need to awaken their dulled feelings. If a person lives in America, he comes to class after work, with the burden of the day's worries. Therefore, we need preparation before the lesson, which should inspire the person, let him know where he is going and with whom he is dealing. If he just woke up, he is completely detached from reality. And if he just came from work, he is immersed in his material problems and should shake them off. Therefore, we need to set ourselves up for the correct sensory perception of the study. From the first part of the Daily Kabbalah lesson, May 24, 2020, the right way to study the wisdom of Kabbalah. The best medicine. Question: if I tried to give goodness and love to everyone around me at work and in my family, then how can I protect myself and others from viruses? Answer: in general, yes, but I do not think it was so obvious to you. Of course, the best medicine is proper, friendly interactions and support. We should have given these things to nature, but we failed to do so. However, On the contrary, we stole, offended and humiliated others, etc. If we are all elements of an integrated system and we are completely dependent on each other, then we should behave accordingly. Try to understand what kind of analog, integral system this is in which everything depends on everyone. Question. You say that, by our negative actions, we bring the system out of balance. What are these negative actions? Answer. They are dislike, even hatred, and an unwillingness to compliment each other and worry about each other, etc. That is, any imbalance in this system in which all elements are responsible for each other, is called evil. From CAB TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, March 15, 2020. The hotel we should stay at. Question. I am the owner of a small hotel in Quebec. Do you think I will have clients after the coronavirus, when everything returns to normal? Answer. It is possible because Quebec, where you live, is a good place to relax, for self-reflection for young and old couples. People go there for special impressions of each other or of the surrounding nature. I myself would love to stay there with you. Comment. But today the tourism business is a difficult industry for further development. My response. Over the past 20 to 30 years, tourism has developed to such an extent that it has become an industry sector. I know, because I myself flew a lot and traveled to different countries to meet with my students, not because I am interested in flights, although I also like to learn about new cities, a new world. I do not think that this industry will recover very quickly because people will have more serious life needs. After all, tourism, including sports, is rather an indulgence for our earthly way of life. Of course, I wish all industries a quick recovery, but I think people will begin to perceive that they should fill themselves with other impressions. We were created in order to engage in a relationship between ourselves so deep so as to discover the very inner strength of nature, the source of life. When we unite in good relations and rush toward each other in a good way, we find a common power between us that applies both to you and to me. This common force, which externally divides us into yours and mine, is one within us. It is called our Creator because it gives birth to us. Revealing it between us, we begin to feel in it that we are on a higher spiritual level. The fact is that from the highest spiritual level down to our world, everything happens through an endless chain reaction, division, division, division. But if, on the contrary, we unite, 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 then in the end we will reach one single higher force that has given birth to us and controls us. And then we enter the state of eternity, perfection. We must achieve this state and settle in it. This will be that hotel, that real, eternal, perfect house in which we need to stay. From CAB TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, April 12, 2020. The relation of nature to humanity. Question. Can we, in a state of isolation, from our small shells separated from each other, perceive that general idea, that general message, the pressure that nature has on us? If so, what should a person start with, from his family, from his country, or from all over the world at once? How can he get out of his shell? Where is his space in which he can feel the right pressure? Answer, to begin with, we must understand that it is not a matter of any physical actions with arms, legs, or tongue. Our movements must be internal in order to become aware of ourselves as one single organism, which in Kabbalah is called soul or Adam. Adam is not the first person, as we used to think. Adam translated from Hebrew means man. The entire human community as a whole is called Adam. Therefore, we must take into account that nature refers to us as Adam, meaning the common humanity. And if, in accordance with our development, we do not come to the conclusion that we are one common Adam, that is, a system in which everyone is interconnected and must support each other, then in this system there is a bias between what we really are, selfish, alienated from and hostile to each other and what we should be today according to our development on the part of nature. The difference between what nature requires of us, and what we really are gives rise to all kinds of impacts from nature. These are environmental and technical problems, including viruses and everything else. All negative consequences arising globally in human society, in each of us and between us, are the result of our inconsistency with the single common system called Adam. Also, Adam is translated as similar to nature or similar to the Creator, from the word home, similar. And it turns out that at every moment of development, the degree of lack of our likeness to integral nature causes, on its part, a negative impact that manifests itself at different levels, inanimate, vegetative, animate, or human. Now it manifests itself in the form of discrepancies at the animal level, meaning in the form of a coronavirus. From CAB TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, April 19, 2020. Where is the truth? Question. On one hand, the newspapers and everyone around us tell us about the victims of the coronavirus, how many people died, how many are in serious condition, etc., and how the virus is perceived by humanity as evil, as harmful. On the other hand, the sky cleared up, nature can suddenly bloom, no one is stopping it. In China, only 2 months of lower levels of particulate matter in the atmosphere contributed to the survival of 4,000 children under the age of 5 and 73,000 people over the age of 70. And among other things, the number of cases of oncological diseases has decreased. We heal ourselves. We go to doctors less, pay less attention. Where is the truth? On one hand, the virus is the evil that drove us into our homes. On the other hand, it prevented wars, stopped cancer, cleaned the air. Children were born, the elderly did not die. Where is the truth? Answer: men must understand why this coronavirus appeared. It came in order to stop our past, selfish development where we were already approaching irreversibly disfiguring this globe. And now we can begin a different type of relationship between us and with nature. Because it is basically the same thing. This is one system, inanimate, vegetative, animate, and human nature. We must begin to relate to the entire nature in a different way. And if this happens, then no viruses will be needed. We will make our life beautiful without them. From CAB TV's News with Michael Leitman, April 27, 2020. Desire is given to us from above. Question: if it has been revealed to a Kabbalist that our world does not exist, does he forget the sufferings that happened to man and humanity? Answer: it is not that he forgets. He feels that all this did not happen to him. Question: therefore, he does not associate himself with that entity that felt all this. Who felt it then? Answer: the desire to enjoy oneself did. This is not his desire because it has been given to us from above, from the Creator. Remark: but a man felt reality within himself. My comment: yes, since it was given to him, he experienced it within. When this desire was taken away from him, he started to feel that it is not his. Question: is it like a caterpillar that when it becomes a butterfly no longer remembers that it was a caterpillar? Answer: not that it does not remember. After all, there is nothing but desires. If there is any desire in me, then I live it. If it disappears from me, then it is not mine. Therefore, if we connect our desires and our intentions, then the whole past disappears and we become an absolute one. From CAB TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, June 10, 2019. Does nature feel our pain? Question: how does a Kabbalist perceive nature? Does he feel it as something intelligent, sensible and responsive? Answer: of course, because we are part of it. We are inside a common sphere called nature or the Creator. In this regard, we are a part of it, no more. Therefore, a Kabbalist thinks about how to connect with nature, how to make himself an integral part of it, as he has entered into merging with the Creator. Question: does nature feel our pain? Answer: naturally. If nature created us as sensitive and sensible creatures, why should it be deprived of these properties itself? Comment: but it hurts a person. My response: doesn't nature hurt as well? You just don't feel it. After all, you don't feel the pain of another person either. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, April 12, 2020. When does the point in the heart open? Question: you have said that a person has a Jewish point. Is this the black dot or is it the point of non-identity, and when does it begin to be revealed? Answer: when you begin to think about the meaning of life. Question: is it in every person? Answer: yes, in everyone. This point is called Jewish, Yeshudi from the Hebrew word union, Yehud, union with the Creator. It gradually becomes a Sephira, and then a Patsuf. It is a whole spiritual structure. This point is in every person in the world. Those in whom it awakens are called Jews, Hebrews from the Hebrew word lever, to pass, to transcend from an egoistic state to an altruistic state. It has nothing to do with the Jews in our world. It is a spiritual definition. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, December 15, 2019. New Life 1208. The right, the left, and the balanced approach.
Hello, and thanks for joining us on the New Life Show with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Yael Eshedarel. Hello. And today we'd like to talk about the right, the left, and the balanced approach. Turns out that science, according to the way that a person's brain responds, can determine whether that person will be politically more inclined towards the right or the left. And we'd like to understand why all throughout history there are these two currents, the right, the left, and what is the balanced approach. Yael, please. Yeah, we see that our political inclination is influenced by many factors, and on this show we'd like to examine what influences our inclination in one way or another, and what is the role of these approaches, right-wing, left-wing approaches, in our development in general. And I'd like to understand what characterizes a more balanced approach between the right and the left, and in your opinion, how can we best develop as a society in this regard? And first of all, some statistics that shows that the richer and more educated tend to vote for the left, and the weaker populations, they vote for the right. These are facts. Now, why is there a connection between a political opinion and a socio-economical status, for example? What do you mean by right and what do you mean by left? I'll tell you what's defined as right and left. No, in relation to what you said. Yeah, exactly. This relates to different parameters in relation to what is the right and what is the left, according to different figures that I got from the internet. First of all, about religion. So the right is more connected with religion than the left. Usually the left is more secular, and therefore they're in favor of separating religion from politics. In regard to nationality, for the right, it's something more important, national values, nationality, and therefore they prefer their nation over other nations, their own nationality over other nationalities. And if we're talking about the left, then nationality is less important. And they're more in support of equality and in support of other nations, many times even if it comes at their own expense. Also, the right is very much in favor of the army, seeing it as something that unites the nation. And the left sees the army as something necessary, meaning force isn't a tool that they want to use. But I also read on the internet site that in practice, organizations and countries with a left-wing ideology, they see force as a legitimate tool for education, and so there's a kind of gap here. It's not a gap, it's a deviation. Economy. The right is against governmental interference in the economy. They believe in a free market. The left believes in equality at the expense of free enterprise. They're inclined more towards a socialistic kind of government. They believe that eventually everyone has to live in a mutual economical respect, so to speak. Immigration. The right is against the immigration of people into their country, and they're more in favor of separatism, and therefore they're in favor of laws that support this, and the left doesn't. They're in favor of a multicultural society, immigration, and so on. These are more or less some of the parameters that more or less define what the right and what the left is. So I more or less took the middle line, the mainstream, in regard to what the right and left are. I didn't go to anything extreme. So we're talking about religion, economy, society, immigration, and military. Now going back to the question I previously asked. Data shows that the rich and educated tend to choose the left, and the weaker populations choose the right. How is that? Yeah, what's the relation between this and that? How is there, how can there be a connection between a person's political views, right or left, and their socioeconomic status? Should be the other way around, right? So how is it that it's not? This is what I'm asking. If you can explain, there are many unclear matters here. It's because we are living in a distorted way in a society that is uncorrected, that it's neither the true right or left. But it's all based on the human ego. And so if we're talking about the right and left, it's not right and left, but it is in what way can I use my ego in order to bring it the biggest possible, best possible fulfillment. That's what's happening in practice. Yeah. So there's no real right and left here, but there's using my ego and the measure to which I want to use it in one or another style, way. On the one hand, I could be really right-wing. On the other hand, I go in the direction of the left. Why is it so? Because all around the world, there's the right and the left, right and left opinions. I think that it has nothing to do with a country's standard of living, with their rich and poor, that usually this is how we want to differentiate, that the leftists are poor and lacking, but it could actually be the complete opposite. Yeah, as polls show, and also in regard to power and army and different things. We see that in this regard we're still pretty much confused. And so I don't think that dividing humanity or even a single nation into right and left in this way would be correct, justified. However, what we do have to do is educate, give the right direction. What are we developing toward? What would we like to see? And then we'll see Then we'll see what kind of inclinations are there in the nation. And as it says, raise a child in his own way. How do we bring him to a state of good? And here we have to see, can we reach some kind of equilibrium in defining what the correct development of humanity is? Because we're talking about humanity, about nations. Can we say what's good for a nation, its final corrected form, that this is actually the preferable state that we should aspire for, the best possible, most complete state? What could that be? And as we start to examine these things, we see that these things that there should be competition and the use of power and let the stronger win and the weaker parts of the nation. And also Bala Sulam writes about this. They think that no, the government should support and we should help each other, but it's because this is how they are. Meaning, a person decides according to his character, according to what he belongs to, and not according to the truth. They don't know what the truth is. But to the measure to which it's rooted in him, this is what he is a part of. Meaning, will a person be rightist or leftist? This is something that he's born with. There's a research that shows that you can see it on a child. When he's still small, will he be right or left wing? I see it on my grandchild. Completely left wing. Really. And it's even hard for me to talk to him. He's so, by nature, I see that he's really, you know, I see it transparently. For him, it has to be that way. Why does nature make people with a right-wing or left-wing inclination? What do you want for them to be? Neither. Without any inclinations from childhood, from birth. Of how to relate to everyone, how to relate to yourself. If we have two forces in nature, the receiving force and the giving force, if we have plus and minus, and the entire nature exists between the plus and the minus, then, if so, how can you think that there could be only one thing? So, just like we see two basic forces, like in nature, plus and minus, reception and giving, and this is how it is also in every person, plus and minus. Yeah, otherwise, there's no existence. If you have a plus next to it, there has to be a minus. So this dualism also exists in a person's political worldview. On all levels, on the material level, psychological, spiritual, all levels. Okay, this I understand. Now I want to focus only on the political level. If I look at a person only from the perspective of his political worldview, you say that from birth we can identify whether a person is right or left wing. Can you define what is a left wing worldview? Can you exactly define it? Because before we confuse a child with our perception, if it's something innate that grows from the inside, we have to see it like, you know, like a growing flower. There's a red flower, yellow flower. So, what is this left-wing inclination that grows in a person? I wouldn't define it as right or left-wing, because nowadays it's so distorted, all of it, that people confuse one for the other. How would you define it? An inclination toward completion, connection, compromise. More or less, that's it. This is an approach that originally has to be called left-wing. And right-wing approach. It's the opposite. It is an approach, an attitude of rejection, defining borders, limitations, setting the boundaries, borders. There's mine is mine and yours is yours. That's the right. And mine is yours and yours is yours. That's the left. Wait, I got confused. Again. Mine is mine and yours is mine. Up to the point of mine is mine and yours is yours. Suppose this is the plus, the rightist. So the rightist thinks, mine is mine and yours is yours. Boundaries. Okay. Up to the extreme, who says, mine is mine and also yours is mine. I'm familiar with that. Now, in between, there's the neutral and the leftist. The leftist says, yours is yours, and mine is mine, up to the point of yours is yours, and mine is yours. Everything's yours. That's the extreme. So in the extreme, the rightist says everything's mine and the leftist says everything's yours. Yes, the force of reception and the force of bestowal. This is how it's called in the wisdom of Kabbalah. So everything's yours. That's the left wing. Let's call it left wing, but it's not. Okay, and everything's mine. That's the right wing, just in order to understand. In the wisdom of Kabbalah, we use the will to receive and the will to bestow. Okay, is there some kind of permanent division in society that a certain percentage of people will always have this natural inclination, like you can see on a little child who's inclined in this direction, and a certain percentage will be inclined in that direction? In the root of the soul, you have this entire range in everyone. Mine is mine, and yours is yours. Mine is mine, and yours is mine. Mine is yours, and yours is yours. In short, all of these four things, by the way, it's like the Dalet Prinot of Or Yeshal, that exist in everyone. The question is, the measure to which it stands out. You can't say that there's a person who by no means will give anything. There are conditions under which he will give. A little child, you tell him, give me, I'll give you something in return. No, this is mine, you can't take it away from him. And there are others that give easily. What's the division? 50-50 or naturally? How is society divided? The more we develop, on the one hand, we have a bigger ego, meaning mine is mine and yours is mine. This is something that's clear to us, more aggressive. I want for it to be mine, okay. But on the other hand, when we're in a more closed, tightly closed human society, then I can intellectually understand, even though that I don't want to keep it, that it would be good to also have mine is mine, yours is yours, have borders, boundaries, and security. Is there a connection between our emotional and intellectual development? Of course. Meaning, because a person's ego grows and wants to swallow everything, it causes him to feel more rightist, but intellectually understands that we have no choice, that we have to reach some kind of reciprocity or what. If it's because you have no choice, then it's not left-wing. No. It's like Bala Sulam writes. Then you give them crumbs off your table, those weaker layers in society, for them to be able to survive, otherwise you won't grow richer. So, Yael asked, how is society divided nowadays? So nowadays, you predict that all around the world we'll see a surge of the right wing, because man's ego grows, the inclination to take everything for himself will go and grow? Yes and no, because along with it, the more the population grows, the more weapons and wisdom become accessible, open to all levels in society. By that, you lose control. In the past, this is how the elites were, that they had the education and culture and universities and politics and everything, you know, like the Cambridge High Society and things like that. And today, as if anyone can be accepted. Furthermore, you have affirmative action and so on. Okay, up until now, we tried to define the right and the left-wing approaches. We understand that it's like two ends, and we define them, and I also understand that it's natural. You also said that society as a whole is included of these four combinations, and also is every person, and it depends on a person's root of the soul, what's more dominant in him. And all of us live together in the same country, in the same world. Is it possible to talk about a balanced approach that balances, evens out the right-wing and left-wing approaches? No. There is no balanced approach because nature, and we see this from research, from life. We see that nature does not allow us to be good people that can agree on something and later keep that agreement. Nature doesn't allow it. We're changing from one moment to the next. I didn't even sign our agreement. I'm already thinking about how can I breach it, benefit from it, and finish you off. So you're saying that the egoistic desire that's so strong is actually what does not allow? It doesn't allow neither the right nor the left to sustain something that ties them together. So the collision between the right and the left will only grow as we go and develop? Of course. Okay, let's jump a bit into the future, into a more corrected society than the one that we're familiar with. Will it be more right or left wing? One opposite the other. Meaning, it's impossible that there will be more of these or less of those, but on and off, like waves. Yeah, for very short periods. It's not like it was in the times of Hitler or in the times of the perestroika in Russia, but it will be much shorter periods. So even if we see waves a bit more to the right, more to the left, if eventually we look into the future, 5, 10, 20 years from now, we'll always see these two inclinations, towards the right and towards the left? Yes. So how is society supposed to get along with these two inclinations? It can't. It'll come to a world war. It'll be general destruction. Meaning the reason will be political? The reason isn't political. The reason is that within nature, there are these opposite inclinations that are embedded in nature, and they will become more and more revealed in order for us to create a system between them that will balance them out. When you have plus and minus in electricity, for example, between them, you put a resistor that does what? That the plus and the minus connect in the resistor and perform some kind of work, like with an engine. You have plus and minus. And this is how we come closer to the correct usage, but it has to be something common that we want to succeed at, and that here we're compromising, that sometimes this works, sometimes that works, but we divide things equally. But in the meantime, we don't learn how to do this. So in order to understand the combination of the two, where have you ever seen something like that in a political, cultural, scientific system? Where did you ever see that these systems are synchronized, that they're correctly connected, supplementing each other. In technology, okay, in an engine and something, there yes. But that's in the still vegetative and the animate. But on the speaking level, on the psychological level, you can't do anything. So what does the right wing inclination contribute to the development of mankind? Because you're saying, this is good and that is good. Neither are good, but only the two together. How could it be that I use just one wire in electricity without the other? I can't make anything work. So how does the right-wing approach contribute to the evolvement of humanity? You need both. Can I see something if there's only white light? Can I see something if there's complete darkness? I need both for them to be somehow connected, balanced. Okay, what I actually wanted to ask is, how does the right and how does the left approach contribute to the development of humanity in reaching the middle line, the golden path, which is what? The golden path. None of them in and of themselves have any value. Right and left in and of themselves have no value. So what is that golden path, the middle line? It's where people start understanding that only the connection between them, above all differences, only it has a 100% value, and if not for this connection, then each, let's call them, force, quality, has zero value, or even less. It sounds like a left-wing approach. Why? Because you said the golden path is the middle line, where people start understanding that only the connection between them above all differences has significance. Where did you see above all differences? I never saw a left-winger who is prepared to annul himself in order to connect with the right. I don't see the left as something preferred, even though that it maybe sounds this way according to what they say, according to their lies, but not at all. No, but at the beginning of our show, we said that the left is more of an inclination toward compromise, connection, supplementation, and the right is more rejection, setting boundaries, borders. So maybe I didn't get it. Again, what is that golden path, the middle line? It's when I use the right and the left in a balanced way that there can't be the one without the other. And therefore, both of them aren't succeeding. They can make revolutions, these or those, on and off, won't succeed. Success can only come from both of them together, and therefore there is nothing better than their connection, where no one gains or succeeds more than the other, but actually between them there is something that we have to build, a kind of a common realm, which is the middle line. And what will you have there? Both the right and the left, in mutuality, understanding, mutual annulment, that each annuls himself toward the other, and the main thing for them will be their connection. What will that give them? Otherwise, there is no other way to exist in nature. How can an atom exist? Molecule, regardless what. They're all based on the law of balance. Going back to Olin's question, because I feel that there's something unanswered there. True, you're right. This is why in our world we're erring, that we think that the left is preferred to the right. Not at all. One is not preferred to the other. But like you said, everyone has their own natural, innate inclination, since their inclination is towards compromise. But we've already been there. What is radical left? Nazism. What is radical left? Well, maybe not so extreme, but it's like it was in Russia. That's the left. But where's the compromise, supplementation? I'm not saying compromise or supplementation. I'm saying left. It's Nazism, fascism, Russian communism. That's the left. What was good about it? Eventually, they started eating the right. So, no radicality, or not even that. No one inclination can bring us to that state that you call the golden path, the middle line, like with the example of plus and minus in an atom. Meaning even those inclinations that seemingly seem to us as positive, if we use only them, they will bring us to bad things, like you just described. And to the contrary, if we use only the right inclinations, we'll reach a different extreme, and in between there's a world war. Unless we understand, and I think that this is what I understand now, that actually, all in all, we consist of all of these inclinations, both each of us and our society, and we're supposed to learn how to function as an atom that has both, and they supplement each other in order to create some common thing. Amen. Okay, our time is up, so can you define what is that common thing that we have to create? About this, we'll talk on our next show. No, really, it's a big topic. This is already spirituality. It's not of this world. About the correct connection between the right and the left, by this, we rise to the common upper force. Dr. Lightman, thank you very much. Thank you, Yael. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, all the best.
Rise above yourself. Question: how can you convince your mind of what you want to believe in your heart? Answer: you must abandon both the heart and the mind. You can live neither by the heart nor by the mind because they are purely selfish. They twist us around their finger, they confuse us all the time, they do whatever they want. The only thing you can do is surrender to the upper force so that it works on us and shapes us. To do this, we need a small group of 10 people where we are connected to each other and try to connect over our egoism. Then it turns out that I surrender to the attributes of this group. And so does each of us. Thus, in this mini group, we create a positive force that is already around us throughout the universe. And it turns out that we assemble, as in a laboratory, a model that attracts the general positive force of nature. Through feeling its action, we unite among ourselves. We begin to be nourished by it, and our actions become better. Question: can we say that everything is given from above and we must surrender to this process? Today, a huge number of people are getting sick. How can they correctly relate to what is happening? Answer: in order to correctly perceive the attitude of nature toward us and to be objective, independent of our animal properties, we still need to rise above ourselves. This means making what is called a restriction of our selfishness. Kabbalah teaches this. When you are at least at the zero level, that is, when you have not yet mastered the next, altruistic level, but you are already rising above egoism, then you can correctly perceive the actions of nature with respect to yourself. This way, you can impart it to your children, family, and friends. From CAB TV's Meetings with Kabbalah. Victoria Bonia, March 29, 2020.